Everybody, I'm Aaron Showtime Taylor. Welcome to Hard in the Paint. You know, this shirt that I have on is the Uncuffed Project. When this show started, it started as an Instagram live show. And there are several nonprofit organizations that I promoted then that I still promote now. Again, the Uncuffed Project is one. We All We Got, that's ran by John Windham as well. We also have For the People, that's ran by Hillary Clout. And we have today's guest.
Is it Hillary Blount?
He said Hillary Blunt. This is what we get. But I'm gonna let you play this clip. I'm gonna let my producers play this clip.
Board member for 3 years in this prison reform non-profit organization that helps people get legal representation.
It's Unite the People. We're a nonprofit organization that promotes social justice throughout the United States, as well as we provide affordable legal services to the underserved communities throughout the state of California.
So we go past the time of, like, once people already get sentenced, we're fighting for them when they already got sentenced.
It's not over.
And back here today with my partner, one of my brothers, one of San Quentin alumni, one of the ones that's coming out and showing you exactly what it means. Right. When you actually put forth effort into what it is you want to do into achieving your dreams. Cesar McDowell is here today.
How you doing, brother?
He is the CEO of Unite the People, something that he started in San Quentin. So I know you and I first started talking inside of prison at San Quentin.
Right.
And I did an interview on you in the paper I had in there called The Show.
Right.
All right. So what is some of your personal sports history before we actually start talking about specifically San Quentin and sports?
Personal sports history, you're talking about what I played?
Yeah, what did you play?
I played football.
What was you doing?
Since a kid, a fullback, free safety for years, was a monster, of course. wrestling, you know, I wrestled all my life since I was a young kid.
Right.
Monster, of course. Basketball was too short, you know what I mean? I could play, but it was too short. I ran track. I ran track, long distance, pretty good.
A monster, of course.
Well, I did hold the mile record at my junior high school. It might still be there. It might still be there. You know what I mean? I don't know.
But that sounds like an Al Bundy moment, right?
Really? Four touchdowns, poke high. Yeah, absolutely, 100%.
Oh, man, for real, for real. Okay, so do you have a problem talking about what you went to jail for and what
Not
the circumstances, how we met? Go ahead and go into that, man.
Well, what I went to prison for this last time, you know, because I went to prison as a kid.
Right.
And this last time I went to prison, I was sentenced to 3 life sentences for a nonviolent crime, right? But just getting into it, I was married. I was married, had 3 kids at the time. I was a young kid. I had been to prison already, so I was on parole. Mm-hmm. It was me, my family, her family. We were at my spot. And we were watching, I think it was Roy Jones. It was one of the boxing matches. We were too loud. So one of the neighbors called the police. And the police came knocking on the door. Hey, you guys, turn it down. So we turned it down. But now, I don't know if you remember this, but back in the day, if you come in any type of contact with the police on parole, they call it police contact. They take you back to Chino. You do a week or two till committee sees you. You get out.
Right.
Well, I see them go to my car out my window, and they run my plates after they told us to turn it down. So I already knew. So they turned around, came right back to the door. Bam, 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 bam. I tell my brother, man, you open it. My brother, you ain't doing nothing. Go open your door. That's your house. I open the door. Hey, you Cesar McDowell? Yeah, yeah. They take me to Chino. So they take me to Chino. Normally, you do a 1 or 2 week turnaround.
While you're waiting for a Morsi hearing.
Where you're waiting for the hearing.
Right.
So when I get there, though, I end up there for about 9 months. Right? And they just never, I'm on committee. No, you know. So it took about 9 months. But I was a young dude. I was about like 24. So, you know, back then, I'm still calling back to the neighborhood. Hey, man, I'll be home soon. And, you know, but every time I call, my close buddies would tell me, man, the police are always at your house. And me being so young, I was like, oh, well, maybe they're trying to build a case on me. Oh, it's another, hey, I'll be out. Never really paid attention to it until once I came home. And I always tell people the same thing, you know, hey, I'm a fairly handsome guy, right? You know, I was even more handsome when I was younger, right? But with the six pack. But anyway, so I get out of prison and all the women in my neighborhood, I mean, every woman in my community right there was trying to date me. Every woman, like, man, hey, fuck your wife, man. Let's go out. I'm married. You know, I got kids. I'm cool. You know, I don't do that. And but all of them were, even the little Asian lady, like, hey, you want to go on a date? All that, right? I'm saying, I'm dead serious though, right? You want to go on a date? And I'm like, no, I'm good.
You burnt out.
And it's the truth, right? So it still hasn't hit me until one day I'm walking my son. He was about 6 or 7 at the time. I'm walking my son out to the car. And my son, and I'm about to take him to school, and the cop drives down my street. And my son says, hey, Daddy, look, there's the cop that spends the night with Mommy every night while you were gone. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. Wait, everything just hit me. Son of a bitch. This is what, oh, I had no, so I'm pissed, right? She's inside with my 2-year-old.
So now, wait a minute now. In that, what was the aha moment right there?
When I saw the cop driving down the street, this is the same one that put me in handcuffs, so I recognize him.
Mm-hmm.
When he says, Daddy, there's the cop that spends the night with Mommy every night while you were gone.
Hmm.
It all hit me. That's what these dudes were trying to tell me when I was in prison. That's why all these women is trying to take me out, is they all mad at her. But nobody wanted to say the words, hey, man, your wife is, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's when it hit me like, son of a bitch. Oh, hell, so I'm super mad. Right, so I take him to school, though. You know, I never let the kids see me mad. But I take him to school, come back to the crib. Now, I'm expecting to walk in the house, and I'm mad. So, we're cussing on here, right? So, I walk in the house like, is you fucking the cop that took me to jail?
Right.
And I'm expecting her to say, like, oh, no, silly. Oh, you're crazy. All that, right? She just stared at me. I'm like, oh, you a punk-ass bitch. So I start packing my shit. I'm out of here. Now, I'm throwing shit around. I never try to make myself sound like an angel, because if I get mad, I'm mad for real. I'm throwing shit around the house. Now, there was never no allegations of physical violence, no scratching, kicking, nothing, right? I'm packing my shit, but I'm out of here. And I'm cussing. I tell that bitch, I'd kill you. Fucking the cop that took me to jail. I'm getting my shit together. Now, she knows one thing that she knew about me. Was I idolized my pops, right? My pops to me was Superman, the best cat ever born, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she knew I always wanted my kids to look at me like that. I wanted my kids to look at me like, you know, damn, my pop, I got the greatest pops. And so that's how I was. I always, you know, every football practice, I take my sons, you know, every cheerleading, take my daughter. So after I packed everything, it's been about 3 hours, right? I'm yelling and screaming and, you know, I'm for sure mad. And so now I got all my shit. I packed everything. I took my dumbbells. I took everything. And I'm heading out the front door to the car. And she has my 2-year-old. My 2-year-old was home. So she has my 2-year-old in her arms. So she comes to the door. And she's like, oh, you just going to leave your babies? That was her key. Whenever I'd get mad, like, you know, I don't even want to be here. You going to leave your kids? And so when she said that, you just going to leave your babies? I turned around like, bitch, get in the house. And I get in my car and I leave. Well, they gave me 3 life sentences for that, right? They gave me life, terrorist threat for telling her, bitch, I'd kill you for fucking the cop that took me to jail. They gave me life for false imprisonment mm-hmm. when I told her, bitch, get back in the house. They gave me life for child endangerment. They said while I was arguing with her, I wasn't worried about my 2-year-old's well-being. So they gave me 3 life sentences. I did 20 years straight off the 3 life sentences. That's when I met you at San Quentin. I was on my like 10th year when I first got there, or 12th year or whatever. And during that period, as I started to get older, you know, when I first came to prison, I was, when anybody that knows me would be like, yeah, that's, but as I got older, I started seeing it. Like, right, like one of my father's favorite sayings was, let me hold 100,000 till I can see further. So I don't know. I just picked that shit up as a kid. So I used to always say it just as a habit. I was, hey, man, let me hold 100,000 so I can see further. But 90% of the dude's responses in prison to that question would be, man, who if I had 100,000, I'd get me a lawyer mm-hmm. so I could get out. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And so over time, it wasn't just my case or my sentence that made me aware of the injustice. It's like, damn, this guy had a cellie named Monty Shaw. They gave him 25, like he's 65 years old, for stealing a Visine bottle out the store.
Yeah, I remember that case.
Yeah, you know what I mean? He was
I remember
a,
that case.
And this cat was my, and it just used to fuck me up. Like, damn, you 65 with 25 to life for a Visine bottle.
That's a death sentence.
You're dead. You finna die in here for a Visine bottle. So more stories, you know, you just keep hearing it, You know, you had the cops killing the little black and the Hispanic kids in the streets, and we riot and we rally, but we can't never do nothing about it. We don't have no political clout. We don't got no lawyers. We don't got shit. So at one point one day, you know, I used to always wait for every law that passed. Mm-hmm. Every law that passed, I used to call my kids so much, like, Daddy's coming home. For real this time, and my brother Mitch, right? My brother Mitch and Smack. We always rocked anything we did, you know, my brothers.
Well, before you go further, let's back up, because let's back up to the laws that was passed that you would make that call on. So let's start with like Prop 36, I believe, would be the first one.
Right.
Because that was
put on. Well, we can go back before that.
Okay, let's go back before that.
To 66 in 2006 when they were trying to pass the three strikes.
So let's go back further to that. Let's go back to 2004. Mm-hmm. There was a proposition that was put on the
we're talking about the same thing.
On the ballot in 2004. Mm-hmm. The night before I went to sleep.
Hold on a second. Stop. No.
You already
That's
know what
I'm talking
about.
That's the
that
same
was 2004.
One. It was 2004?
Yeah, I was at Calipatria State Prison when that happened, because I'm like everybody else. You went to bed seeing the numbers like, okay, I'm going to wake up and my freedom is going to be waiting on me.
Right. That was 66.
That was Prop 66.
Prop 66.
Okay, all right.
It was the taking away the three strike law, mm-hmm. right? I don't know if it was strictly for nonviolent or if it was a three strike law, period. I think it was period, to be honest, but everybody was in support of it. I had my kids, my little daughter, Laura, I had her out at the grocery stores everywhere, passing out flyers, like, hey, vote on this, you know, bring my daddy home. I'm in the cell. I'm at Ironwood at the time, right? I'm on CRDR, one of them, DR. And our numbers is up here. I'm watching the polls. We all watching the polls. Everybody else is losing. The Prop 66 is winning.
Big.
So
it was winning big.
Big. But now Arnold Schwarzenegger started running them bunk-ass commercials talking about vote no on this. They're going to kill your kids. People not knowing that the child molesters, rapists, and all of them, this didn't even have anything to do with them.
Right.
Nobody's about to come home and rape your kids, right? And I must say I'm anti that too. But... So
well, wait, before you go any further, let me make a statement here, because I've said this before on the show, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll reiterate it real quick. Mm-hmm. And I think I could say this for him too. We don't want to see prisons abolished. There's some people that
Not
commit crimes that deserve to be in prison.
100%.
Right? We're 100%. Just talking about the length of time that people are spending in sentencing. Right? That's what we're talking about. But trust, there are people that deserve to be in jail, who 100%. Should be in jail, and there are some who deserve to rot in jail.
Right.
And
they
I have
let me be on the board.
I have no problem saying that. So, yeah. Right. Okay. Now go
ahead.
But
no, but that's the truth, though. You know, I always tell people that I'm not one of them guys, or even our organization. We're not about, oh, nobody should be in prison. Let's get rid of the prisons. Bullshit. We need prisons. There's cats that mess with kids and mess with women, in my opinion. Hey, I'm 100% against that.
Right.
You dig what I'm saying? But so... When
okay,
this thing...
but before you go further, let's mm-hmm. wait a minute, because we're going deep into the woods on this, and I want to make sure, mm-hmm. because this is hard in the paint. So just for clarity purposes.
Clarity.
You was in the movie Cue Ball?
Yes, sir.
Was you one of the hecklers in the movie Cue Ball?
I was the heckler in the movie Cue Ball.
Did you turn to Chris DeMarco in the movie and say, quit crying, bum?
Absolutely.
100%. Make you go sit over there with the rookie.
100%.
And when Ron Davis turned and looked, did he actually turn and look at you?
100%. Because it got quiet. That part happened. And if y'all know who he is already, but this is the announcement, Mr. Black Chick Hearns, right? So everybody, you were announcing, everybody was doing their thing. And I'm constantly, you know, they were coming to me like, hey, talk some more shit, say some more shit. And so I'm talking shit to somebody on the court. Chris DeMarco. The dude on the sidelines.
Jacob Evans.
The brother?
The rookie. Yeah.
The rookie turns and says something to me. And so I turn to him like, shut up, bum. You're a bum just like them or something like that. But right when I said that, after I said that to Chris DeMarco, right when I said that, it just seemed like the crowd had got quiet. So it went out really clear. So when I said, shut up, you're a bum, dude, the warden turned and looked at me, and everybody froze. I backed up behind the pole, and I told the camera, y'all finna get me sent to the hole. Right? Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that happened. And they caught it on camera, which was crazy, was they definitely caught it.
I've been using it for my digital flyer all week on Instagram.
Right.
Okay, So now let's get back to this criminal justice. So now, mm-hmm. while you're at San Quentin, it's 2016,
right?
Mm-hmm. And you go in the cell, and you have this idea, you have this vision mm-hmm. that becomes Unite the People. Talk about that.
Right. Well, what happened was, again, one of those props that we were talking about, 36, 47, passed, and I'm calling my family again, saying, hey, this law just changed and it pertains to me. And then, again, they come back, oh, it's not retroactive. That's the first thing. It's always not retroactive.
Prop 47.
And then, oh, you know, it's a property crime bill or something now or whatever. And so I used to call my brother all the time, hey, you know, this is going to. So finally, now when I call, my kids don't even respond. Like, yeah, Dad, for sure you're coming home. My brother would always be like, mm-hmm, all right, all right. So at one point, man, it just hit me. Stop waiting for these other people to do it, and why don't we do it ourselves? So I called my brother, like, yo, man, let's start this organization. Let's you know, start an organization that is prison reform, that does policy work, and provides legal services, mm-hmm. affordable legal services for cat, because everybody don't have that $100,000 that I be talking about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, when we started the interview off.
Right. So, you know, I told him about it. Let's do it. He was kind of hesitant at first. And then I'm like, look, I handle all the footwork from here. So I had one of them little cell phones that you're not supposed to have, right? I've had tons of them. But I took my little cell phone and I went on Fiverr. Right, Fiverr, the freelance website. And I mm-hmm. hit one of these guys up, like, yo, I want to build this website. So me and this guy, he's in Pakistan, worked on building the first website. And that was when we were called WeThePeople.org.
Okay.
Right, and that tells you that I was a guy in prison. How do you name a company WeThePeople.org? And so our website was WeThePeople.org.com, right? Hey, I didn't know .org is for organization.com, it's for commercial. Right? Anyway, right. So we start the organization, and the first thing we do, and a lot of people, I don't even know if you know this, but we were doing a three strikes initiative to get the ballot on the three strikes.
That was to get the three strikes law on the ballot.
For the nonviolent crimes.
That was 2018.
17 is when it started.
When it started.
18. Now that was me from my prison cell.
Nobody knew that.
Nobody
let me stop for
that.
A minute. So let me, I'm gonna look right into my camera and say this. So basically what you're hearing right now is, he was waiting for Prop 66, Prop 36, and Prop 47.
Right.
Told his family that each one of those was going to help him come home, and it didn't. And so he said, okay, why wait for somebody else to get me free? Let me do what's necessary to get myself free. And he started an organization, right, that when this interview started off, that piece that you saw is the organization that he put together from a prison cell.
Right. But hold on, I'm going to give you some more information that you don't know. Right, that a lot of people don't know, like literally very people. So what I did was we started an initiative. We wrote our own initiative. I can say it, Wiz wrote the initiative. You know Big Wiz that was
in
your building?
Wiz. Yeah,
Wiz went out. We went and took a few other propositions. And Erline, I got to give Erline credit.
Erline Woods of Ear Hustle.
Yeah, Erline Woods of Ear Hustle. He did something similar first. And then we were like, man, shit, we could really make this happen. So we take the initiative, we write our own. Wiz drafts the initiative, we send it to the lawyer out on the streets that work, you know, that we brought in on the organization, and he took full credit. He was on ABC News, he was on a bunch of different news stations talking about this new initiative that he wrote. But the whole time it was Wiz that wrote the initiative, but we didn't want to say nothing because Wiz
yeah, how could you? Because he's actually pushing he's pushing what you won't push.
Right, and Wiz wrote it from prison. But so I ran that campaign, the Three Strikes campaign, from my prison cell.
Right.
I'm talking about, you know, count time and all that. I'm faking sleep. As soon as they walk back by, okay, yeah, we're back, everybody, right? But that was when we were still WeThePeople.org. And we ran that campaign. We had a lot of success. We didn't get it on the ballot. A lot of people that was promising to back it financially would back out. Most of them would say, you know, I talked to the guy, Lowry, John Lowry. I talked to everybody. And they said they would commit funds, but only after you get it on the ballot. Like, they all say, yeah, I'll give you $4 million. I'll give you this million. I'll give you that after you get it on the ballot. The problem is, gathering signatures, we needed 300,000, but we had to get 400-something thousand signatures. and qualify three something, right? It cost like $4 or $5 million just to do that. Mm. And so, you know, that was something that, that we couldn't do financially. So that ended up failing. And then we went to doing a little policy work. And one day we put on our website and we sent out a MailChimp email blast that we were going to start taking people's legal cases for low fees, mm-hmm. right? Instead of, because most people, that's the problem. You don't have $20,000 to go hire some firm to look over your case. Mm-hmm. So what we did was we brought in a lawyer buddy of mine, made him the president of the organization. We had like about 20 different lawyers that worked. We didn't even have an office at the time. Mm-hmm. We had lawyers that were working from home, right? And so what we did, man, was we sent out that blast. In the first 60 days, we just got thousands and thousands of emails from people saying, hey, you know, my uncle's in prison, my dad's in prison, and we need help. And then it just started taking off from there. We started taking people's cases, we built their staff, got our offices, and that's what we did. And so now that's what we do today.
So now you come home after 20 years.
Yes, sir.
Right. And what was some of the first things when you got out outside of business that was a shock for you?
That was a shock. First thing that shocked me was food prices.
Yeah.
I went to McDonald's, right? They dropped me off. And I know you know the whole story about leaving during COVID, right? But when I finally do get out, they dropped me off at a hotel. Mm-hmm. In Corona. I walk across the street to a McDonald's, right? I ain't been free. I don't know. I walk in there. All I got is this little card with the money on it, right? So I walk up to the counter and I tell the lady I want a Big Mac combo meal. Big Mac fries and soda. Was it $2.99?
Or when we left?
you dig what I'm saying? So when I say I wanted the combo meal, the lady came back with like $12. I might have put a pie on something. She came back. And I'm like, no. I want one combo meal, man. And the woman's arguing with me. I'm arguing with her. How is it $12? Right? But that was the first thing that caught me like, wow, okay. Then we'll get to the women's clothing. But paper towels.
Wait, women's clothing.
Come on, man. You knew it. You noticed it as soon as you got out. Women's clothing.
Oh, okay, yeah, the way they were dressing. Yeah.
After 20 years is way different. Every woman wears them little jogging pants, and I mean, we on grown up, but the little print in the front, every woman wears that.
Yeah.
I've seen girls that, you know, women that would make sure they pulled it up. That was a shock, seeing that. But the biggest shock, though, that was weird for me, right? But the biggest shock of them all was cell phones. Not how to use them. I knew how to use them. How everybody lives on them. Everybody's mm-hmm. on their cell phone 24 hours a day, all day, every day. They took me to the hospital when I was at San Quentin, right before I left. And they shackle you, you know, you go to the hospital. We get off the van, walk in the hospital, and we walk in the lobby. And in the lobby, the police get against the wall. We wait. I sit down, wait our turn. It was like the Twilight Zone. Every single person was in there just zing, zing, zing. I'm looking around like, oh, shit. Like, this is crazy. It looked like the Twilight Zone. But those are the biggest things that shocked me.
I don't know. I like the phrase that as people are so into their phones, they don't pay attention to what's going on around them.
100.
You know? And it's a wonder why people aren't crashing in each other every time they start walking around, because it's like nobody's really paying attention.
They're crossing the street with their phones in their hands. You know, they texting while they're driving. Yeah, 100.
So now let's go back to Unite the People. So you actually, because while we were inside, Nancy Skinner, one of the state senators, came mm-hmm. inside, mm-hmm. right? And you've met with her and I met with her while we was mm-hmm. inside.
I actually didn't meet her that way.
Oh, you didn't meet her inside?
I met her. I was inside, but I met her totally different.
From outside, did she write a letter for you and your organization?
Yeah, that was later.
Okay.
Right. What happened was, while I was inside, I was working with her office on one of the campaigns we were doing. And, of course, they didn't know it was Caesar McDowell. You know, they were just thinking about my brother Mitch, who was the face of the organization. But I actually met her that way mm-hmm. and started doing some work, you know, as the organization that way. Then right before I went home during COVID, that's when they started locking the institutions down and guys weren't able to get credit for rehabilitative programming. And so we had drafted a proposition to the governor's office and said, hey, look, this is what we want to do. We want to give everybody like a year or two worth of credit for not being able to do these. And there was other things. We had given them like a 7-point proposition. They killed 4, they kept 3. But they ended up working with us, Senator Skinner's office, ended up working with us in the governor's office and getting everybody that, it was like 130,000 people incarcerated, about 100,000 qualified. And they took like 4 to 6 months off of everybody's sentence. Mm-hmm. It was close to 100,000 people sentenced that we got.
So I want to make sure that we pause on this and let that really sink in. We're talking about an individual who came to jail under 3 strikes, right, for a terrorist threat, right, false imprisonment, child endangerment, something involved with it, with the baby, right, and given 3 life sentences, right? And then when the propositions passed that didn't help him, he helped himself by making his own company, his own nonprofit organization. And now he's home. And I was one of the recipients of that 5 months being taken off my sentence. Now, even though I had 50 years to life, I still qualified under another proposition that came out after he left, which was Prop 57, or happened right before he left. And I qualified for that. But having 5 months taken off my sentence, even if I did have 26 to life, means a lot. And then you can imagine at least 50,000 of those people were going home soon anyway, and they got home sooner.
Right.
Because of what this man who's sitting here did. This is why I bring people like this on the show. This show isn't here necessarily to talk about hard in the paint sports. Sports is what brought us all together. Sports is what brings everyone together. But I bring people on this show who are literally out in the community doing something to change the narrative, doing something that has an immediate impact in that person's lives and the people that love them. This is why Cesar McDowell is on here today. To say just what he just said. 100,000?
It's 130,000. We got 100,000 done. Yeah. And you were one of them.
And I was one of the recipients.
And I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a lot of
Marcus
cats.
Henderson, Wally, was yeah. And he and I were cellies and it passed and we both got our paper at the same time. Mm-hmm. And we giggled. We was like, man, I mean, you know, it ain't much, but you know. That's 5 months knocked off a brother's sentence.
You know how much begging I had to do to get that done?
Listen, I'm pretty sure that you kept a tube of toothpaste in your back pocket because I'm imagining how many asses your breath smelled like to go around there
to get that done. Man, they fought. We had a 7-point proposal, and it's crazy you bring up Wally.
Right.
Wally has been talking so bad about the organization as of right now, and he doesn't even know. I don't think he realizes that it's me, or I don't think he realizes that we're the ones that got him that 5 months off that wasn't. But I just wanted to say that in case he ever hears about this.
Oh, he's going to hear about this.
Wally's been telling everybody, Unite the People's a scam. Unite the People's not really out there helping people. People have been coming back and telling me that. And I'm like, damn, I don't think, because I've known Wally for years. We were Ironwood together.
I'll talk to him.
Yeah, but anyway.
Listen, the good thing about being a San Quentin alumni at the level that we're at, you can call in. Uh-huh. Straight to the operator at San Quentin, be like, send me down to the education office. And then when you talk to Reyes, hey, go get Wally up out the back.
Tell him, bring his big ass to the phone.
We can do that now. Right. So your organization also deals with people on the resentencing under 1170D as well?
Yeah, everything.
Okay, so 1170D does what? And give me the short version of it.
There's 1170, see, there's a ton of 1170s. There's 1179-5 that deals with 1437 felony murder. If you have a felony murder case, the petition will file, where the lawyers will file. I'm not a lawyer. They work there for me, right? For me and my brother, right? For the people, man. We work together. But anyway, 1437, that's the 1179-5. Mm-hmm. Then there was 1170-D1. That's what you're talking about, the resentencing. Where it's up to the DA, it's their discretion mm-hmm. on whether you get resentenced. But one of the things we're trying to knock down is this disproportionate sentencing. Not saying the guy should have been, but 1 million years. Not saying I shouldn't have went to prison. Maybe I should have for what I said. But for 3 life sentences?
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So that's what 1170-D1 is. And it's not even D1 no more. It's changed now. It's been amended to 03.
Okay.
But it's the same thing. And what it is What we do is we put a face. We put a face to the name. And because you can petition, you can send in a two-piece of paper petition, the DA gets it. There's so much work that they have to do in order to qualify you for that. They have to pull your C file, number one. The DAs have hard times dealing with CDC. CDC does mm-hmm. not like giving them the files. So the DAs don't want to do this shit. You know what I mean? Because you have to, that's the first thing they have to do is pull that. Then they have to get family support. They have to do a lot of shit in order to even qualify you to let you go. So what we do is we say, you come to us and say, man, we want to retain you guys to do these 1170s for us. What we do is we pull your C file, right? Mm-hmm. We write the check to CDC. It's a small check, like 20 bucks. They send us your C file. We get support letters from your family, support letters from education, your work, and we put it together and we put a face to it. We do all the footwork for the DAs. So if you have 1,000 files you have to go through and you're looking, but 100 of them from Unite the People has everything you're looking for already in it, who are you more apt to look at?
You're going to go after the one that you have to do the least amount of work and so, get the most right. amount of effect from it.
So we give them that. So that's why we've been more effective than most law offices. Because most law offices, they'll just take it, do the two petition, send it, you get denied. Ah, oh, you got denied, we're sorry. But what we do is, I mean, we're always on the phones with the DA's offices. We, you know, I dealt with George Gascon's office quite a bit. I've done a lot with them.
I was actually going to bring that up, too, because I was going to actually just basically say, how much easier is it working having formed a relationship inside?
It's a lot.
With somebody like George Gascon, because you got to know him through the symposiums that was held in the media center, correct?
Not at all.
You didn't meet George Gascon inside of San Quentin?
No.
How did you meet him then? And the reason I'm asking the question this mm-hmm. way is because everybody thinks you had to be in San Quentin to meet these people to have these mm-hmm. connections with them. How did you meet him?
I met George Gascon through a lady that works with our office. Her name is Danielle Frost. Mm-hmm. She has an organization called Athletes for Impact, right? They do, a lot of athletes do work in the community. We do work with the homeless. We do work with the high schools and
that's
all that.
That's AFI you're talking about, right?
Right, right.
All right.
And so she's one of them. And so she works, she's also on our advisory board. She works with us. So we do, I'm on the LA comms committee, right? We do a lot of, you know, work in LA type stuff. So I actually met Gascon through working with Athletes for Impact and Danielle Frost. So once I met him, that's when, you know, just the work we do, it just came together and do a lot of work. But I'm going to be honest, it's harder because of Gascon.
Hmm. Right? Explain that one.
Because everybody is so anti-Gascon, right?
Oh, okay.
So anything we're trying to do, Gascon can't really touch too much of anything. If he wanted to help a lot of people, because of the pushback he's getting, they can't really do nothing. Half their staff, last time I called them, a lot of people don't know this, last time I called them, there's 10,000 guys right now for that resentencing you're talking about. 10,000 guys in L.A. You know how many people they got working on it?
Maybe two.
Four. There's four DAs working on it for everybody for the state of California. They just don't have the staff. And it's because...
Wait. There's four people working for Los Angeles County?
Yeah, for Los Angeles. Okay. No, for Los Angeles County.
All right.
There's four people working on it. So if you got four people, 10,000, the other DAs...
That's 2,500 per person.
The other DAs don't want to do it. So when they're trying to find, in order to have a resentencing, there has to be someone for the people, a DA, and there has to be a lawyer for the individual. Mm-hmm. So you got the public defenders that don't want to do it. Some of them do. The DA's majority don't want to do it. So he's stuck.
And you basically got people sitting in prison that can't get out because of other people's
right.
interpretation or understanding of politics.
Right. And so they're saying, like, oh, I hear black people say it and Hispanic people and broke people. I'm going to use that because it's not really a color thing, right? It's more, and George Gascon, last time I said that, he's like, no, Cena, you're wrong. It's absolutely a color thing because in the enhancement laws, in the state of California, 82.8% of enhancements that were ever given out, you know, those are discretionary. Enhancements like, for instance, Black, Alan McIntosh, he had a gun possession charge, which carried 16, 2, or 3, right? But they gave him the alternative sentencing, but same as the enhancement. That was their discretion. They didn't have to give him that. Mm-hmm. So I say that to say this. With the enhancement laws, it's the DA's discretion to add that time or not add that time, right?
Right.
82.8% of the times an enhancement was given out in Los Angeles County or in the state of California, it was to a black or Hispanic. So
say that number one more time.
82.8% of the times that somebody was given a gang enhancement, gun enhancement, any type of enhancement, 82.8% of the times it was to a black or Hispanic.
4 out of 5 times.
That's crazy. So out of 100 people, 82 of them, if 82 out of 100 times, 82 times went to a black or Mexican. So that was what Gascon, you know, he pushes that. But anyway, long story short, that makes it harder because anything we're trying to do in L.A., you got to really, really do it. It's not something that just happens fast or happens easy.
How difficult is it with the title or the designation formerly incarcerated, returning citizen, ex-con? Mm-hmm. How difficult is it to do the job that you do with that, or does it make a difference in what you're doing?
It makes 1,000% difference. In some ways, it makes it harder, right? And if you just tell the truth, when it's dealing with our people, when it's dealing with black people don't respect other black people's work. So let's say, for instance, and this used to be a running joke, the guy we brought on as a president was a white guy, Tom Leversky, right? And me and him used to have a joke, and the people in the office, I would tell a family, like, look, this is what they could do for you. These are the lawyers. I don't give legal advice, but I can tell you the services. Mm-hmm. This is the service they could do for you, and I'll put you and let you talk to the lawyer. But, oh, no, that ain't going to work. I ain't doing that. Then he would get on the phone, say the same exact thing I just said, and they would be like, oh, my God, really? Okay, let's do it. And so when they get off the phone, we would laugh like, damn, it's crazy. It's because you're black, they don't believe shit. So that is the negative part of it. And maybe dealing with some of the political type stuff. You know, we deal with mayors and all that. That might hinder it some. But it's also an advantage. Because when the people call us, they know the CEO of this company, out of the two guys that run this company, one of the guys is formerly incarcerated. Mm-hmm. So he understands what we're going through. And then we only try to hire people who have formerly or currently incarcerated loved ones. Mm-hmm. I like my staff's husband to be in prison. You know, somebody they love to have been there or is there so that when they deal with the clients, they actually give a fuck. You see what I'm saying? Give a fuck. And we say that in the office all the time. I'm only trying to hire people that give a fuck so that, you know, they try harder. They really care. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
because there's an emotional investment. There's empathy involved in all of that. You know what I'm saying? And even if, let's say their loved one can't come out of jail, watching somebody else get, you know, have their loved one come home helps a lot. And I like that because I see that on the videos as well. So now you get out. This is going on. Right. Mm. And so tell me how Tory Lanez gets involved in what you're doing.
Well, again, there's a guy that we work with, a client of ours that we try to help, who is connected to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Right. And then also dealing with Danielle Frost again, you know, some of the things that we have done. We help Tory Lanez. Let's say this. We're helping Tory Lanez's uncle get resentenced.
OK.
And so that's how we met. And then he really liked what we were doing and he wanted to get involved. So he got on our advisory board. He's been on there now for a few years. Like some people think, oh, he got on there only after that BS happened or whatever happened. And he was there before that. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? But he's been involved for a while now. And that's how we got started, just dealing with his uncle. And then, you know, he started coming out to the office. He started donating money, trying to help people. I don't know. You saw the story that was on all the news and TMZ and all that, where we invited. There were so many people that couldn't get help. Even mm-hmm. the average law office charges about $20,000. Just that's the average fee when you say you need help.
And that's like you said, starting the conversation off.
Right.
You know, what would you do if you had $100,000, man?
Right.
I'd be trying to get out of jail.
Right. And so we have families that call us that don't even have that. They don't have, we charge $3,900, maybe $35, even $29. It just depends, right? And there were so many families that couldn't afford that. One day he called, like, hey, man, you know, what can I do to help? And I told him, hey, let's put these families together. So we invited all 50 families out, mm-hmm. and we didn't tell them what it was for. We just told them, hey, you guys come on down, and we want to talk to you. When they came down, we had the whole lobby set up and food and all that out there. And then we brought Tory Lanez out and surprised everybody and paid every family's legal fees. Hmm. And so everybody left the office that day with their receipt. You know, Tory paid for their legal fees, and we got them taken care of.
Hmm. Now, that's the type of work that, you know, a lot of people know nothing about, mm-hmm. but everybody should know about.
Right.
In that camera, I want you to talk to the man or the woman that's still sitting in prison, mm. right?
Yeah.
And might be losing hope.
Right.
Right. Talk to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, first thing I would say to a cat man is, your time will come, irregardless of how it comes, it will come. But one thing that you have to do is you have to fight for it. Even with my case, if I didn't do what I did, I'd still be sitting there now. You know, there's a lot of guys that, and even with our organization, there's a lot of guys, they lose hope while we're fighting. It's a long fight. If it was easy, everybody would do it and everybody would be out of prison. You gotta keep fighting. You're gonna have to file petitions. You're gonna have to file writs of habeas corpus, appeals, whatever it has to do. But the only way that it's gonna happen is you gotta make it happen. If not, you're gonna sit there until that door opens for you on its own, and that doesn't happen until CDC gets all their money.
That sound like pretty much like you just summed that one up right there. Season McDowell has been the guest here, but before we go, let me give a word of wisdom over here into this camera. You're sitting looking at two people together, if you add both of our times together, served 46 years. Inside of those 46 years, the one thing that he and I have in common, the connectivity that we have, we're born black and we're born male. Inside a prison, you don't often know what you're doing until after you get older and you start reflecting back. And during my time in prison, just like a lot of other people, the time that I went into prison was during the 90s, where it was a lot that we call toxic masculinity now, right? And I took that into a hyper-masculine environment inside of prison. But inside of that environment, I didn't realize, and a lot of us didn't realize, that we were actually oppressing other people around us, because we weren't, or in some cases, people weren't comfortable with who they were, or they were comfortable with who they were, but uncomfortable with somebody else. We were actually oppressing people in the 90s into the early 2000s about their sexuality in prison. Now, let me be clear. A lot of us went through our time. We went in heterosexual, we came out heterosexual. Yeah. But sometimes when you're not, you can be seen as weak. And because of that, that mentality went in and helping to oppress other people who were already in an oppressed situation. So I'm bringing this word of wisdom up because, for me, it's easier for me to look into the camera and tell you, I can understand where I'm wrong at. And now that I'm older, I want to make that apology to other people who may have felt bullied by me at one point when I called myself a champion against bullying. So now I'm looking back and I'm looking at back at my life and I'm looking at some of the decisions that I'm making. I'm saying, you know what? It may be time for me to look into the camera and start apologizing to people, not for what I did, but for the ignorance I moved in it with. And now that I'm not ignorant anymore, now it's time for me to look back and say, you know what? I was wrong. We need more people to be able to look at themselves in the mirror and point out the things that they may have done wrong, rather than point at the finger and say what was done wrong to them. This goes back to what I was speaking about before, about character and integrity, humility, accountability, and responsibility. Each individual from this point forward has to start becoming individually responsible for the things that they do and what they say, and accountability is huge. You cannot sit here and look at two individuals who served 46 years and think you can tell either one of us something that doesn't sound like I'm taking accountability or responsibility for the things that I've done.
Right.
Because you can't sit here on this set with us and not take accountability and be responsible for what you've done. That's what it means to be hard in the paint, on the self. Be hard on the self, and everything else will get easy. Just like my man just said, my name is Aaron Showtime Taylor, and you have been hard in the paint.